Succession number 28698, reel 21.
Well, we got back to Wheaton on Christmas Eve, so we all had Christmas at home with our families. But January 1984 started off just as busy as 1983 had been. And we were put on Spearhead Battalion that lasted from 23rd of January to the 5th of March. And when you're on Spearhead, you can't go anywhere. But what is checked is that all your equipment is 100% up to war fighting role. So it's one period in your time that you don't mind this particular role, because the system has got to give you everything. So you get all your weapons, your vehicles, your communications, your radios, you get everything. And you're static. You can't be sent away anywhere in the world unless you're going to carry out your Spearhead operation as the Spearhead Battalion.
And that's in case of any problem occurring anywhere in
the world. So the CO, quite rightly, used this period of static to fetch us back up to speed on Northern Ireland training, NCOs cadres, support weapons cadres, and we also took part in a brigade CPX in late February. So we were brought up to speed with all our expert cadres and weapon systems, without interruption from anybody else having to be used for anything else.
But were lectures an important part of your training?
Yes. The CO would get the battalion on parade and say, look, we are going to go to Northern Ireland, here, there and everywhere. Or if we get called out to Spearhead, we can be used in that country there. The whole battalion were always brought up to speed of what we were doing and why we were doing it.
And you would be lectured presumably by people who could bring you up to that level. Other than just the training element, the active element, yeah. Was there a lecture element in there?
Oh yeah, if it was for Northern Ireland, we'd get the Northern Ireland training advisory team in. Or if we're going to go to a foreign country, like before we went to Kenya, you used to get the Royal Army Medical Corps in, and they would tell you about diseases of the jungle and venereal diseases if you went with the local inhabitants or anybody. And you get briefed on every aspect that you would need to know for wherever country you're going on. At the same time, you get every injection that you would need. You get all your hepatitis, and you get your malaria, and you would get your yellow fever, and you'd get every injection, so you were covered and you were full of the necessary injections for any part of the world that you might be expected to go to.
Was VD a problem in the battalion?
There was none in the battalion, but that's the reason. Of course, you've got the girls in Kenya, and of course, this was before AIDS, really. But I know of a few guys, while we're in the jungle, they'd come out on a weekend, they'd go with somebody, and of course, by Monday, they'd be in front of the MO, getting the old penicillin jab. And in fact, the CO was quite disturbed at this when it was Drew Drury, and had the whole battalion on prayer before we came back to England, and said, I hope there's no married men among you, but if there is, I hope you're not proud of what you've done, because what you have done, you haven't been thinking of your wives and children. So we did get a big preacher's lecture before we actually flew back from Kenya to England.
Was it a situation where they knew they were going to go out and pick up a local girl, that they should go out with the necessary condoms, etc., etc.?
Like any other country, in any other period in army time, you had the opportunity to take two condoms every time you passed the guard room. But I suppose soldiers either didn't take them or didn't use them at times because they were never in a fit state to do it. Had they not been drunk or whatever, of course they wouldn't have gone with them.
And if they caught the disease, did they lose pay, allowance, whatever? Was not a punishment element?
Not unless it made you incapable of carrying out your duties. Of course, penicillin, a jab of penicillin, you were better within days. But going back to the old days, even when I was a young soldier, yes, if you made yourself incapable of carrying out your duties through venereal disease, or even getting a tattoo on that it turned wrong, or anything, you might be a contractor while you were drunk, if you couldn't carry out your duties, you were jailed and charged. But it never happened in Kenya. Nobody was ever incapacitated through any disease, and certainly not venereal disease.
I guess that the interesting point would be, of course, if that happened, the family back home would know there was something wrong, because presumably there was a pay element there.
Yes, if you were jailed, of course, you'd get stoppage of the pay. But like I said, it never happened to the battalion.
Would that not mean also stopping of family allowance? Did that go on?
No, it'd come out your soldier's part of the pay at source. But as I said, it never happened, so nobody... again, we also used the opportunity of being static in Wheaton at the time to go down to Altcar, which is near the big ranges down near Liverpool, for our battalion skill at arms meeting, which you held every year to make sure everybody was up to the same standard of shooting. Then you'd find out your marksmen, and then your better marksmen, and your snipers, and then the best shots in your battalion. And then that was in the April, and then still in the March period. And then
this is 1984
still. And then in the April, we start training because we knew we were going to attend the UK call-out exercise, Lionheart, where the whole of the British Army and all three services would mobilise and go to BOR for our war role. So we knew that was going to happen. So we started training for Lionheart, and we did basic training in Catterick, and then advanced our training in Sennybridge in Wales. And we used the same period for the whole battalion to do the infantry combat fitness test, which is your 30 miles with all your equipment on your back. And our Bergens were now coming in where we'll get the bigger Bergens and we're carrying more equipment.
And what kind of weight would you be carrying?
Anything up and over 100 pounds. I mean, we're talking 120 to 150 pounds if you were carrying your Webern, your weapon, your ammunition, and 4 or 5 days of food on your back. So you do that over a 13-mile period.
13, did you say?
13.
13.
And then we also use the same period to come back from Wales as a full British Army of the Rhine road movement, which you'd stop every so many miles and you would have refueling. So people would be practiced of how in convoy you'd refuel all your vehicles on a road move, and feeding stations where the CQMSs and the quartermaster would be waiting, and you'd get your food, and you'd give you hot food if there's hot food available, or a 24-hour ration pack to keep you going. So we practiced our road moves as we would when we got to Germany.
It's kind of a road discipline there.
Yes. Night movements were lights out. Night moves with just convoy lights on, cross-country moves and road moves. So we practiced everything. And then in June and July, the biggest part of the battalion got sent down to Bisley for the famous the Bisley rifle meeting. And we were the sponsor unit for Bisley 1984. So 500 members of the battalion were sent down there to run Bisley Rangers, because that's how many it took. However, the recce with their Fox recce vehicles, they went to do their recce concentration, and because I was Milan, we went out to West Down Camp on Salisbury Plain to do our Milan concentration, and that's where all the Milan platoons in the whole of UK all meet in one camp, and we all put through our paces for a 6 weeks period.
Did you ever fire them as a barrage?
No, it's not a barrage weapon. It's individual. Because of the way you guide it, you take individual tanks out. But you are taught how to hit command post tanks, i.e. a Russian senior tank with the aerials on and communications tanks or other vehicles that can do more damage to us. So you learn an awful lot of armoured fighting vehicle recognition. So you know which tanks to take out. So it was 6 weeks of solid anti-tank work, which was brilliant. And then August, same year, the whole of the battalion were down on Salisbury Plain training area on one of the 24 infantry brigade exercises. So we're now training at brigade level again on exercise Griffin's Gold. And this was for our war role and for all the other roles of KP, you know, key point protections, generators, nuclear plants, all that kind of thing. Fighting in built-up areas, defence shoots and defence of land, assault river crossings, and air moves in deliberate night attacks using helicopter, because we knew we were going to go into a helicopter role in another year's time. So we're learning all these, where we'll be taken out by a helicopter, dropped off, we'll get a defensive position, where we'll channel the Russian army down for us as an anti-tank battalion to kill the Russian armour off.
That must have been a difficult thing, trying to get enemy tanks coming to you in a certain formation in a certain direction too.
Well, once you've done your land appreciation, and you know tanks can't come up the rivers, and they can't come up boggy areas, and Russians being Russians would want to come up the main roads because of the size of the tanks and the speed they want to go, and their support vehicles like ours are rubber wheeled, so they'll want to be on hard standing, so they'll come up your motorways and they'll come up your A and B class roads. So you can, in Wales, like parts of Germany where our war role would be up valleys. So the idea was we'd get on either side of the valley, knowing that the Russians would have to come up a certain road, and hopefully we'd be the people to knock the armour out or cause a blockage where the artillery and other units then could kill the Russians in this, what we used to call, killing areas.
So this was a technique you'd learned about the Russians, that they the one would choose off roads, in effect, with these heavy tanks.
They would need the quickest means possible to go from A to B with the amount of armour they would have. So it was obvious to the intelligence people and the operations people which routes it would take. So we would develop the technique where helicopters would drop us off in wooded areas and valley tops, so we could oversee the ground, divided up into killing areas, and then dedicate certain Milan posts to certain areas, where with us and the mortars and the machine guns and the tanks and everything else, would kill everything in that killing zone. So we did all that, and after our training, we knew then everything we were capable of doing in our war role. And it was shortly after that, we went back to Wheaton, rejigged for a BOR road, sea and air move. This is when the whole of the army is now getting mobilised, and we're going over to Germany to do our war role. And we arrived at Harwich. I started off as a passenger in the front of the Land Rover. Halfway down, because we were travelling at night, I took over as the driver, so I got no sleep whatsoever. We got to Harwich, where the whole battalion was told to have forced sleep before they went on ferries and boats and everything else to get you to BOR. I had about half an hour's sleep when I was walking up and told I was OC ship movement for the Royal Armoured Corps and the Armoured Recce Troops, who would take their tanks and their APCs to the other side of the water. So I had to report to the captain of a DFDS ferry and say there was X amount of hundreds of tanks and APCs and soldiers coming on, and I was in charge of them. And I'll tell you now, before I left Harwich Docks, that Dutch captain had me drunk. However, I was in charge of everybody on board as the military representative. We got to the other end, and I was also IC with the Royal Military Police of getting all the tanks and the APCs off the ferries.
So it was your role to actually get them onto the vessel?
No, there was RMPs and harbour people doing that, but if there was any ill discipline on the ferry crossing over, I was the man in charge, between the civilian captain of the ship and the military. For all the work my units, I was a sergeant major that had been IC ships and all the documents that went with them, because every vehicle has a manifest. So I had boxes and box loads of manifests that I had to take to the captain, who I'm sure couldn't even read English, but he trusted every word I said. Trouble is, once I got all the tanks off at the other end, my battalion had disappeared. Because with it being a war role move, you came off the ships, you clear the dock area, and you start heading up country into Germany. When I asked where my battalion was, they said, oh, they left 2 hours ago. So I would jump from battalion to battalion, catching a lift off any vehicles I could, till finally I caught up with the battalion in Senelager, where they were again having a forced rest, force fed, refueling the vehicles, and getting their orders to which part of Germany we were going to move into.
There must have been a lot of traffic on the motorways from
every autobahn from the docking areas into the heart of Germany was military vehicles, and it had been planned. The civilian vehicles had been put onto side roads and everything else, and there were certain battalions in position. As you drove by, they would halt your battalion, drive down, give everybody jerry cans of fuel or bulk containers to refuel all your vehicles, and feed you at the same time. You top all your water up, so you put your oils, petrols and lubrications in your Land Rovers and your Bedfords. You would carry spare fuel that they'd give you. You would carry food to get you through for the next 24. And then they would give you hot food or sandwiches and a cup of tea. And then you would move on. And then the next battalion would come, and the next battalion, and the next. And it was absolutely brilliant, as would have happened in the war. And the whole of the army was manoeuvred this way. Not just us, but other NATO troops as well. It was a fantastic thing to be part of. So I finally caught them a day or so later, and the whole battalion was ordered then to position west of the River Leen. So, and the exercise, like I said, was massive. As far as you could see, it was military vehicles of every size, shape and description.
Did you get into contact with the units of other nations at this time?
You never had a chance. Okay, you were moving, and just so you wouldn't block the roads, because if a vehicle broke down, you were dragged straight off, and the Remy would either mend you, put you on a low loader, and send you to a repair point somewhere in Germany. So vehicles were going off the road and getting never to be seen again, but the main roads, the autobahns, had to be kept clear, and it was a well-oiled machine, and it was really good to be part of. Most of the forces had all been mobilised, and it was the Germans and the United States forces who acted as our enemy. So everybody that wasn't German or Brit was all on our side.
And Senlag is a very large training area, is it?
Oh, Senlag was just the muster area. That's where you got. That's where you went. You got bombed up with your blank ammunition and your extra fuel and your extra food, and you got your bearings of where you were going to physically go to carry out your war role, and you went. The battalion just got split after that, and being anti. All the various units got mobilised to their particular areas, and the companies within our battalion got mobilised to their areas. And as the Milan platoon, we were split to our blocking areas. So we headed in country and took up our positions. At the same time, we had reinforcements from the reinforcement part of the army. The ex-regulars who had gone out and were willing to do come back in for a period of time. So we had our reservists. We dug in and we did various aspects of war throughout for a period of weeks, and then at Endex battalions were going to stagger the way back to the UK in order not to block up all the roads all at the same time. So the gradual withdrawal from Germany was over a staggered period. We were lucky at this time that the CO arranged for us to go and visit the Gordon Highlanders in a place called Dielenhofen near Hamer, and the reason for that was, in a year's time, or less than a year's time, we were going to go to Hamer as our next posting. So it was an opportunity to have a recce of the camp we were going to live in, the married quarters where we'd fetch our families, and the area which we'd occupy for our next posting.
What kind of terrain were you then in when you went into this blocking position? What exactly is a blocking position?
It's a blocking position at the end of a valley or a large re-entrant where you get several battalions in on either side of the valleys, covering the roads that we suspected the Russian forces would come up in bulk. And it was a way where we could hit the front tanks, which would bog the road up, hit them from the side, hit them from the front. At the same time, the artillery could pound them. Our tanks could take them on tank for tank in these killing areas. And that's what we practiced by helicopter and on foot and by vehicle.
And did the enemies do this so you could actually practice it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was some manipulation where they would have to come up these areas to do it. There was confusion at times because, remember, the enemy was the Germans and the Americans, and the umpires didn't quite coordinate everything the way it should. And people come up wrong roads, or they try and use their own initiative, which was good for practical training, but not good for the exercise. But we were exercised in defence, in withdrawal, in the attack. And I think the exercise for the mobilisation of the whole of the UK forces, using ferries to get there, aeroplanes and ships and boats and planes, was a success.
And you wouldn't be firing live ammunition into these?
No, we weren't carrying live ammunition, but we were carrying mock live ammunition to make sure it took up the space, the weight and the vehicles. Because if you needed your war supply of ammunition, you couldn't just imagine it on paper. You had to trial it. So vehicles were loaded with their cement-filled boxes to the correct weight that the ammunition would be, just to see how we would move it by unslung loads of helicopters, in nets, in Hercules aircraft, with the RCT in their vehicles and in our own battalion vehicles. So it was a trial of everything.
Did the Air Force involved in it?
Yeah, they would give fighter ground attack to support the exercises. So we had the realism of that we weren't the only people on the ground, we were covered from the air. We had our few days in Hamer with the Gordon Highlanders. Then we returned back to Wheaton.
How did you get on with the Highlanders? They could be quite aggressive at times, Scotsman.
No, they were perfect horse to us then, especially in the Sands Mess. And we did have a bit of a games evening one of the nights. And it was a good introduction, knowing that we were going to live in next door camps for a period of 4 years to follow. So, no, it was brilliant, and we had a really good working relationship with the Gordon Highlanders. But we had to go back to Wheaton first, and the whole battalion were then converted from 24 Milan posts now to 42 Milan posts, and our role changed from BOR reinforcements to an air mobile battalion in preparation to be part of the 6 Air Mobile Brigade in Germany. We set our farewells to Wheaton, to the local dignitaries. We had retreats, we had pageants and parades with a band and bugles, and said farewell to the people that who'd hosted us in Blackpool for 3 or 4 years. I, at that time, then moved from the Milan Platoon Sergeant Major to D Company, one of our rifle companies, as their Sergeant Major in preparation for the move to Germany. So I'm now in a rifle company in D Company.
And the Sergeant Major's role is what in a rifle company?
Discipline. Most like in the barracks, it's discipline. In the field, on operations, it's completely different because it's discipline and making sure the platoons keep going forward if it's in the attack. Small man, big voice. So the battalion staggered the move from Wheaton to Hamer, but by Christmas of 94, we're all in Peninsula Barracks in a place called Dielenhofen, under command of 6 Air Mobile Brigade, which at the time was part of 3 Armoured Division. And that's what we're there for. We were there to take on the Soviet thrust.
And what about your families? Where were they?
The families came with us. They travelled with us. And because we were travelling by cars, we travelled on ferries. The strange thing is, and it's the same today, and it always has been, if you travel with your family by aircraft, the army pay for it. If you elect to travel by car on a ferry, you pay every penny yourself. And, of course, if you've all got cars, you're not going to leave your cars behind. You'll always travel with your family by car. And so we moved into Our married quarters were in Hamer, but our camp was in Dahlenhofen, which was only a mile or 2 miles away outside of the town. But it was a beautiful part of Germany.
What was the accommodation like for the family?
Brilliant. German houses were always bigger, and they were always better in as much as they all had cellars and they all had attics. So really had 3 stories to your house. And it was a beautiful part of Germany because we're in the Sauerland, and it was we're right on the northern tip of the ski areas. So we had ski areas within miles of where we lived. And it was an area, apart from doing our own war roll training, where companies could get away to train individually. And a couple of the rifle companies went to Portugal to a place called Santa Margarida, and they trained, which was just northeast of Lisbon. So they went to train with the Portuguese troops and Alpine troops. And a lot of soldiers in the battalion learned to ski, and I actually went to do my German language course because we were static enough to take time off to learn language with the Army Education Corps, but with German instructors. Most of the battalion went to learn to ski. And then, of course, we had, like I said, we had the local ski areas on our doorstep. So on a weekend, I got my son's and my wife's skis, and we used to just go down the road half an hour straight on the ski slope, and we could ski to our heart's content.